Tantor Audio presents The Summer Remains by Seth King, narrated by Amy Landon and Zach Villa. In the depth of winter, I finally learned that there was in me an invincible summer. Albert Camus. Every love story is too short. Everyone would, if given the choice, live forever with the person that holds their heart. It is what we do with this too little time we have been given, with our two mortal loved ones, before our too soon deaths on this too small planet, that makes all the difference. Ella Savior, Knightley Cole. Part 1. Summer Sinking. 1. On a sunny Tuesday morning towards the end of March, a white-haired man walked into a cold room and told me I might die soon. I fidgeted on the hospital bed as Dr. Steinberg entered, the late spring sunlight mocking me as he smiled onto the industrial tile floors. I'd known Steinberg since I was 4. He'd handled almost all of my throat problems, and I trusted him. He was like a second father to me, and I knew he would always tell me the truth. That's why the look on his face scared the living shit out of me. I listened for the next 10 minutes as he gave me the gist of the story. It was all so surreal that my mind could only catch certain phrases before the sentence would run away from me again.
"Your esophagus has ruptured again, for good this time. Your stomach is leaking more and more. Toxicity levels are through the roof. Your body just isn't getting the nutrients it needs from your feeding tube any longer.
And finally,
terminal."
"Terminal?" I heard myself squeak, my throat filling up with that weird shivery feeling you get when you know your life has just changed. Steinberg suddenly became very interested in a fraying string on the sleeve of his jacket.
Terminal, he stuttered. "Summer, the thing is, I'm afraid this is a, well, nobody has ever..."
He finally cleared his throat and met my gaze, tears pooling in the corners of his cerulean eyes.
"Sweetheart, I am so sorry to tell you this, but this mountain may be unclimbable for you."
My mother let out a small, sharp sob in the corner and then clapped her hands over her mouth. "Okay, unclimbable." I swallowed, staring down at the floor as I tried to grasp just what that word now meant to me, and my family, and this weird little life I had created for myself. "Okay, unclimbable. Okay." But Steinberg wasn't done yet.
"Hold on. I said it may be unclimbable, not that it definitely will be. I want to prepare you, and I don't want to give you any false hope. But there may be something we can do, Summer. It's a small chance, but still it's a chance. A Hail Mary, if you will."
I reached up to rub my temples. "Okay, well, survival sounds good, better than death, I suppose. What is this Hail Mary?" Steinberg crossed his arms, studied me for a moment, and then took out a chart and launched into a spiel about something called the Porter Collins procedure, an extremely major surgery that would perhaps be saving my life in 3 months' time.
"Nobody has ever survived this particular operation,"
he concluded a few minutes later, skipping all the medical jargon to keep from boring you to death, pardon my pun.
"Nobody. It's been attempted 3 times, but none of those were ultimately successful. One person survived for 3 months in intensive care, but she was 51 and in frail health in general. We think you're a much more viable candidate. But then again, there is no way to be sure. We can do it in 2, maybe 3 months after I've assembled the proper specialists and created a game plan, considering your health doesn't take another nosedive before then, that is. If we're going to try this, we need you in tip-top shape, or as close to that as we can get you anyway."
"Okay," I said again, sitting a little taller. "And what are the chances that this Hail Mary will even work, and that I won't just die a few days after the surgery anyway.
I'm afraid to say that it would be stretching things to even tell you 80-20,
he said, peering down at me from over his glasses. I steeled myself and took a breath. Okay, well, that's better than 100-0. Let's go out with a bang, then, Steinberg. Let's do this. He threw up a fist, triumphant, but I could see the fear in his eyes.
It's settled, then. Hail Mary it is.
My mom rushed over to sit beside me and kind of hang on to my shoulder as some counselor woman came in who helped families handle these types of situations. Transitions, she called them, and just hearing that word threatened to pull me under. Dr. Steinberg watched, an apology on his face as she said things like preparations and options and arrangements. I tried to be polite and pay attention, but truthfully, I didn't give a damn about what she was saying. It was time to go, and things were looking grim, I already knew that. The wet, metallic panic erupting in my stomach was due to an entirely different subject. And finally, the counselor lady, Angie, said in a hushed, clipped, polite tone that spoke of years of having impossible conversations with worried families huddled in chilly waiting rooms. I work very closely with Last Great Hope, a wonderful organization that specializes in situations like this. And if there is anything you want before the surgery summer, a trip to Tahiti, a cabin in the mountains, whatever, we can do it. Or if... Thanks, but no thanks, I said, making her stop short. What? Excuse me? Save the Disney trips for the 12-year-olds, I told her. Spend all that money on a cancer kit or something. I know the truth about those fairy tales now. Make someone else happy. I've got everything I need. Or almost everything. I paused as everyone leaned in. I do have one request, actually. First of all of you are forgetting something vital.
Oh no, did we forget your milk?
My mom asked as she reached for her purse.
I thought I put some...
No, Shelley, we did not forget the baby milk I pump into my stomach tube every day to keep myself alive because my throat doesn't work. But that does have something to do with it. As she pouted in my general direction, I realized what a complete bitch I was being. And then I realized just as quickly that I probably wouldn't be able to stop myself anyway.
What is it then?
My mom asked, stung, and I took a breath and then pushed it back out. Frankly, I need all of you to chill the fuck out. My mom dropped her purse onto her lap. Dr. Steinberg looked at me like I'd just tried to jump out of the third-story window. Angie held her pen in midair and stared at me, the sun turning her brownish eyes ochre.
Excuse me, young lady? My mother asked. We need to do what?
Chill the F out, I said, editing my language the second time around. Sorry, but all this emotion and drama and doom and gloom crap is already making me freak out. You're all forgetting I've had a broken throat and a tube in my abdomen since I was in diapers, and that I can handle this. I've dealt with health scares before, and I will do it again, no matter how much scarier this scare is than all the other scares. Like, I know you're trying to help and stuff, but melting down in front of me is not going to help me deal with this, so please... Everyone take a deep breath, close your eyes, and get your panties out of a bunch.
We're sorry, my mom said, after an impossibly long and awkward moment. It's just that we need to prepare you for what will happen, and...
Prepare me to die? I asked. Guess what, Shelley? I'm going to die one day, be it in 3 months or 60 years, and wasting all my time crying over it isn't going to help. Here's what I want. My one last wish, or my maybe not last wish, or whatever the hell this is. A tear appeared in my mom's eye, and I softened my voice as I reached up to wipe the salt water from her cheek. Okay. Before the surgery, I want to have a normal summer by the beach. I began as I cleared her eye and shook the moisture from my finger. I want to go to the sea
and go to work and read my books and go about my business like usual without everyone breathing down my neck and treating me like a broken person. Because if I am treated like a broken person for one more month of my life, I will break some faces, no offense. Shelley, if you so much as make one special meal, I mean, not that I can eat or anything because I can't. Anyway, I'm burning down the house. There will literally be a pile of smoldering ashes where your kitchen used to be, I promise. Shelley pouted again, but I trudged through. I'm serious. No special treatment, please. No Christmases in July, no excessive hugging, not even a midnight run to Target for some trinkets from the dollar section. And most importantly of all, I looked around and seeing sympathy in everyone's eyes and knowing this request would be completely futile, said, No sympathy. Please. The sympathy is what breaks me and makes me feel broken. If this is going to be my last chance to live and have fun and be normal, then I'm going to need to feel as normal as possible. And that means absolutely no pity, because that separates me from everyone else and makes me different with a capital D. And if I don't stay in a good headspace, I'm going to spend the next 3 months in a fetal position in my closet, having an endless anxiety attack about the surgery. So please, just work with me here and keep the pity locked up. A sigh and a smile. Shelley put her hand on mine. I would never pity you, Summer. You're the strongest person I know, and you always have been. You know that. We all know that. That's not what this is about. I tried to smile back. Thanks, Shelley. Anytime. And can you please call me Mom, like a normal 24-year-old? Not a chance, Shelley. Okay, fine. So then, a Jack's Beach summer? Is that really all you want? I paused as her words hung in the overly sanitized air. It wasn't all, and I knew it. As I sat there, I thought of the one thing I didn't have, the one thing I'd never had, the one thing that screamed at me from the silence and jumped out at me from the shadows. And now that this upcoming summer had perhaps just become summer's last stand, my desire was suddenly more urgent than ever. I knew I wouldn't be able to stop the longing from rising to my face, and as I felt the blood burn my cheeks, I caught Steinberg's eyes again, which just embarrassed me even more. Well, I mean, since you're asking, there is one thing.
Anything,
Shelley and Dr. Steinberg said at exactly the same time, and I stared out of the window as my eyes got all weird and watery. Okay, well, I know something so sentimental is going to sound crazy coming from someone so... Well, you know how I am.
Honest, Steinberg offered, trying to be polite.
Opinionated?
Shelley said.
Brash? Angie asked, even though she'd just met me 10 minutes ago and it was literally beyond embarrassing that she already held that opinion of me.
Headstrong and stubborn and annoying, I finally said, shoving the truth out of the way, and they all nodded. Anyway, here goes. Since you're asking, the thing is, I'd like to fall in love. I looked down at the ground again as everyone in the room broke my most important rule already. I could feel their pity descending on me, smothering me just like it had my entire life, snuffing out any chance I had at being treated like a normal, living, breathing human who deserved to love and be loved just like anyone else, as they said in the Hallmark cards.
Oh, honey, Steinberg sighed.
It just wouldn't be fair to someone,
my mother chimed in, just as Angie, the counselor lady, threw in her 2 cents, too. Sweetie, you have to understand, your situation is very serious. People get irrational during times like these, and if you got involved with someone and the worst happened, well... I crossed my fingers behind my back and shook my head. I'd known they'd react like this. Why had I even tried it in the first place? Some things, I knew, were just better left unshared. Yeah, I said. Okay, yeah, you guys are right. I'll try to put that off, I guess, for now. God knows I have tons of time to think about it. It's not like I'm dying or anything. Everyone forced quick, fake laughs and then got back to business. Unbeknownst to them, however, my mind was flying past the barren oak branches outside the window and soaring above the clouds to some place only I knew. My desires could not be contained by the circumstances in this room, or by sickness, or even by reality in general, really. I wanted love more than anything. This was true, as much as it humiliated me to admit it. I'd wanted love ever since I was a cookie-cutter little girl, being brainwashed by cookie-cutter Disney movies about cookie-cutter princes and princesses falling into cookie-cutter love, and then prancing off to their cookie-cutter castles to live out their cookie-cutter lives. And strangely enough, this desire had only deepened after the fairy tale fantasies had faded away and melted into a more grown-up, real-world entity known as relationship FOMO, when my condition had rendered me an observer from the social media sidelines as everyone else my age paired up and got engaged and married and pregnant and then shouted about it from the Facebook treetops as loud as their keyboards would let them, while I sat there single as a nun with the flu. But I didn't want that cookie-cutter love from the Disney movies and my social media feeds. I didn't want some run-of-the-mill summer romance that would fizzle out as soon as the sun rays slanted in the fall and the Facebook official status went to shit. Because I, Summer Johnson, purveyor of pragmatism, lover of logic, ultimate believer in the rational, and person who was maybe going to die soon, wanted to drown in someone. 2. So before you decide I am a delusional maniac, let me just get this out of the way. The story of my life is not entitled, Broken Girl Feels Incomplete, Seeks Boy to Make Her Feel Whole. I am not some adorably helpless 1940s movie heroine lying on a couch, waiting for a man to plug into me and turn me on like a light bulb. I'm perfectly fine with being me. I mean, yeah, it kind of blows sometimes, and occasionally I wish I was Beyoncé, but I've pretty much accepted my fate of being Summer Martin Johnson, you know? Awkward exchanges with gas station cash register attendants and the whitest of white girl dance moves. This is the situation of Summer. And let's get another thing out in the clear. I know I might not sound like the most realistic person in the world, wishing for this, because let's face it, quietly attractive 24-year-old girls with stomach tubes and moderately large facial scars aren't exactly the most desired creatures walking the earth, especially for the shallow guys in their post-collegiate glory days who just want the Hall of Fame blondes with the sparkly lip gloss and the cut-off denim booty shorts. I get that. But something like this had been brewing for quite some time, all thanks to social media, or as I call it, the public bathroom stall of the world. If you haven't heard of the thoroughly modern condition known as relationship FOMO, fear of missing out, let me explain for you in big, bold, painful letters. There I was a few days before the big surgery bomb, innocently trolling Facebook on one of those late spring Florida mornings when the wind smells like humidity and salt, and you know summer is on its way and it thrills you and terrifies you in equal measure, when I was bombarded by not one, not two, but three engagement stories on my news feed. What was wrong with these girls? Didn't they know that it was early and that my self-esteem was still fragile and that spacing out their wedding bombshells was the right thing to do, if only until I'd injected my coffee? But like the masochist I am, I clicked on one of the stories anyway and scrolled through the pictures of the engagement. This one belonged to Misty, this girl who'd sat behind me in high school science class and had always borrowed my pens without giving them back. For months, she'd been posting about how crazy in love she was, and how this new guy was the one, and how hashtag blessed she was, and generally just assaulting 1,200 of her closest frenemies with other completely unsolicited details about her delirious happiness. And now I guess she'd finally gotten her ring in a cheesy outdoor engagement by a lake. Okay, first of all, I want my pens back, Misty. All of them, including that one with the dark purple ink that I really liked. And secondly, STFU. You have a guy who loves you. We get it. At the risk of sounding like a bitter old spinster clutching her pearls in jealousy, you can stop now. But even my cynicism couldn't overcome my basic humanity. And ironically enough, at the end of the day, there was nothing that could make you feel alone like the silvery, artificial glow of your laptop screen. So as I glared at the photos of Misty's boyfriend bending down on one knee underneath their oak tree of love, while professing his undying devotion to this stupid pen thief, I couldn't help but think to myself, why can't someone love me like that? And then I slapped myself in the face and tossed my phone aside, but not before screenshotting one particularly heinous photo and reminding myself to send it to my friend Autumn to bitch about it later that day. But seriously, my qualms with the pen thief aside, girls were getting married by the boatload, and I couldn't deal with it anymore. At least the Misties of my mom's generation surpassed her in silence. In this constantly connected age, I had to deal with them vomiting their lives onto Facebook all day, every day, reminding me that I was me. I deserved love too, no matter my present circumstances. And I didn't know how much longer I could watch my frenemies pull ahead on the highway of life and live so loudly while I sat in the dark. On a rational level, I knew I was being ridiculous, of course. But still, in some deep and ancient place within me, I felt like a failure, a forgotten loss, a flash in the pan. And unfortunately for my mother, Dr. Steinberg, that random counselor lady, and the boys in my town in general, failure was not something I was accustomed to accepting. Not at all. The days after the surgery news were what the word blur had been invented for. The operation was tentatively scheduled for the Monday after Labor Day weekend. So it was official. I was granted one final summer on the beach. Or not final summer, depending on the outcome of my surgery or whatever. There were scores of documents to sign, tons of words to learn, a dozen therapists to pretend to listen to while they spoke to me in quietly apologetic tones, etc. On day 3 after the Big Bang, a little Xanax had finally helped my mother's anxiety levels descend to a somewhat manageable rate, and the imminent death of the day flashed a sullen yellow above the ocean to the east as she drove me home after our final consultation for a few weeks. And I used the word home loosely, as I had not felt like I'd had a true home in years. Sure, I may have laid my head at my mom's every night, but it was no longer the dwelling I'd grown up in. Things had changed and evolved, and she was always off on dates trying to get remarried, while my father had his wife and his other children in Orlando to deal with, which was shitty, but understandable, I guess. Even my friends were starting to drift and shift and move forward in ways I seemed to not be. No matter where I went, I never really felt welcome or wanted. I was like a piece of a puzzle that had become so wet and swollen from the condensation of a glass left on a coffee table, I no longer fit anywhere. A new but permanent outlier.
Summer, I'm sorry about that request or whatever with the last great hope lady, my mother finally said as she drove, mentioning the elephant of awkwardness we'd both avoided for days. I didn't mean to shut you down like that, you know. I'm just trying to protect you. That's all I want, what's best for you. But who knows? Maybe you'll find love someday.
Yeah, who knows? I said, pursing my lips together with a secret only I knew. I was going to try. So, it turns out there was this app called Spark. People my age were plagued by 3 main questions. Am I ever going to grow up? Am I ever going to get my shit together? And will I ever find someone, or will I die alone in a pile of cats? And since most of my generation had already given up on the first 2 concepts, they were using Spark to focus on the 3rd. After hearing 2 nurses gossiping about it the day after the diagnosis, I'd done some digging on Google, and it seemed I'd found my golden parachute. To make a long story short, the app let you like photos of nearby guys that you thought were acceptably attractive and or not murderers, and if they liked you back, you could message them. This was perfect for me, and not only because I had the social skills of a rock garden and therefore found the prospect of hiding behind a screen for the unavoidably awkward first few conversations with a prospective love interest incredibly appealing. If the guys declined me, I'd never be notified, which was perfect. I wasn't that fragile. I just liked to avoid bad news. God knows I'd had enough to deal with already. Spark was taking the world by storm, and making 20-somethings everywhere have bad dates over overpriced hors d'oeuvres at stupid hipster bars. And you'd better believe I wanted in on that awkward action before fate took me out of it. Not dying in a big pile of cats was the most easily solvable big life question I could confront in the tiny window of time I'd suddenly been allotted. An operation find a boy before the operation had officially begun. Once we got home, Shelley whispered one final apology after a day full of them, and then excused herself to her room to call her sister. I knew she'd really be crying silently into her pillow all alone, and the thought pounded around in my guilty chest like a dresser tumbling down a staircase during a hasty move. As she disappeared down the hallway, I went out onto the porch we'd screened into a sort of indoor-outdoor living room, slammed a comfortable spot into the supremely uncomfortable couch I'd inherited from my great-grandmother, and felt my stomach rumble with something that had nothing to do with my health issues. And though the irony of curing that most human of maladies, loneliness, with a soulless app housed in a 4-inch piece of glass and metal was not lost on me, my sense of humor was nothing if not morbid, especially now that my condition was now literally morbid. And so I smiled and took out my phone. My bones shivered with a manic, reckless, thrilling energy. This was wrong. I knew that. By joining this dating app, I was basically selling someone a ticket to sail on the Titanic. Even if I were able to survive the surgery, the next 6 months of my life would still be rough. There was no doubt about that. But it was also, perhaps, my last chance at love. Life was going to destroy me anyway, be it in 3 months or 60 years. Why not let love help finish the job, too? And as I sat there, another thought sprung out at me like the old jack-in-the-box someone had given me during an extended hospital stay that would jump out at odd hours of the night and scare me senseless. In this age of TMI, I could share anything about myself. Should I share the news about my possibly, okay, probably, impending death? Of course, they deserved to know, these guys I would prospectively be matching with. But as a human, I also deserved to have someone to look at me and see me. Summer Johnson, not the permanent death cloud that now hung over my shoulders like shame during a hangover meal at Arby's. And I knew that would be impossible if someone knew the truth. Besides, I knew I couldn't go one more day as Summer, that girl you treat differently because of the throat thing. And so, like the heinous bitch I am, I decided to do the most sensible thing I could imagine and download the app, take my chances, and hold the information close in the beginning. If I met anyone special, I'd share that I was obviously unwell and edit out the death thing. And if things sank down deep with anyone, I'd figure out how to drop the big news then. But would I even be able to find love in such a short time? And then I realized that in all of the madness, I was overlooking the simple fact that none of this mattered unless I actually got a date, which honestly was still a major question mark for me. Stomach tube, facial scar, shallow boys, etc. As usual, I was being a cynical, over-analytical, self-doubting mess. And so on that ratty old couch in my ratty old porch in my ratty old life, I took the deepest of breaths and then downloaded the app that would hopefully make me officially unsingle for however long my personal forever would last. 3. Welcome, the app said in big red letters. Create your profile. I pushed away a particularly frilly pillow and then wrote a short message under the picture Facebook had already linked to my profile. Hi, I'm Summer. As you can see in my pictures, I'm kinda mangled. Childhood accidents suck. If that's something you can get over, swipe right. If you chew with your mouth open, count NASCAR races among your hobbies, take mirror selfies or refer to girls as sluts, bitches, or come-catching slut bitches, then swipe left. If not, I'm your girl. I like reading.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?